I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you serious?
All right, well, this is How to Kill an Hour. My name is Marcus Bronzy. Thank you in advance for killing some time with us today. On this episode, we've got some very special guests. I'm going to be joined by Joe Cole and Gareth Evans. Now, Joe, you probably will have seen his face in Peaky Blinders, Black Mirror, episode Hang the DJ, Skins, Holby City, The Bill, loads of great content. And Gareth is an amazing filmmaker who's helped to put together some of my favourite fighting films, the Raid franchise as well. So yeah, welcome to the show, guys. Really appreciate you being on here, man.
Thanks for having
Thank you.
How is lockdown life treating you? Let's not pretend that we are not all in different parts of the world in rooms of some sort.
Go on, Joe, you go first.
You know what, I've kind of got used to it a little bit now, and found sort of some semblance of routine. You know, initially it was quite odd. But then I also think when you're self-employed and when you're an actor, you tend to have a lot of time in your hands anyway. And so I'm a pro in filling long days and hours with sort of things to do. But it's been all right, man. I've been learning Spanish, finally kind of got round to doing that. There's a few things that I kind of have planned to do that I've never done. And then since we've been given all this large amount of time, I've done them. So, you know, sort of learning Spanish, doing a lot of writing my own scripts at the moment, quite enjoying that, and cooking. So that's keeping all me right. busy.
Well, yeah, let's get through the list then. So Spanish, how are you learning that? A lot of people we speak to are using Duolingo or something like that.
I started using Duolingo and then I just got a teacher. So I just got one online, just found one online and doing that sort of three times a week, really, and it's been good actually. It's kind of given me something to occupy my time, something to think about, and I've been enjoying it. I've really been enjoying it. So yeah, long may it continue. And I actually think if we hadn't had this quarantine, I would have put it off for another year or 2 years or potentially forever. You know, it's one of these things that I've been meaning to do and just never done. So yeah, every cloud, I guess.
Okay, well, I'm going to do what everyone would do when you tell them that you learn in another language. Do some.
Don't make me do it now, bro.
Come on, mate. I can give you an ole or a senorita.
That's what I used to be able to say. It's early days, man. I don't want to offend any Spaniards right now. So I'm gonna keep.
All right, fair enough. And before we move on to Gareth, what about the cooking side of things? What have you been whipping up in the kitchen?
Well, I'm a basic quarantine bitch, mate, and I've done banana bread twice, just like just like the rest of the country and maybe the planet. Man. I've knocked that up twice. It's sort of a running joke. But yeah, just a bit of everything, man. I'm not massive on cooking. I used to sort of eat out a lot and get deliveries and things like that. And it's sort of this time has forced everyone to get in their own kitchen and be a bit creative. And I actually think it's been brilliant. And it's definitely sort of changed some patterns of behavior for me. I've been doing kind of, you know, vegetable lasagna, shepherd's pie, just, you know, a bunch of different stuff. But it's something that I'll continue to do. And I think having this time where you have to sort of, throw some things together and throw some herbs and spices together and see what happens has been good, and yeah, so hopefully it continues.
Yeah, good. I'll be honest with you. This weekend, my challenge is to make KFC. You said herbs and spices, so I thought I'd be honest. Like, I'm researching KFC recipes, and I want to make myself a two-piece because I've been eating healthy for a few weeks, but I want something a bit dirty. Anyway,
yeah, they've just put the 11 herbs and spices, haven't they? They've just put the 11 herbs and spices online. You can get that online now. Yeah, some guy cracked it. Google it. Some guy cracked it. It got announced the other day. You can do it, mate. You can pick them all up in your local supermarket, man.
Well, this has been a great episode of How to Kill an Hour. I just want to say thank you guys for being on the show. I appreciate it. So, Gareth, how about you? How's lockdown life treating you? Whereabouts are you based at the moment?
I'm in Wales. I'm in Swansea. So I've been up until this week, the weather's been great. We've been quite fortunate to have a garden, so it's not been too difficult to kind of keep two kids and two dogs entertained. So that's kind of, I haven't had enough free time yet to learn Spanish, but you know, I might do that later at some point, you know. It's that thing, like you realize pretty quickly on as set parents that you know, oh my god, it's 7 days a week, every waking hour, trying to keep the kids entertained and figure out what to do with them, you know what I mean? So then you get that 2 hour window at the end of every night then where it's like, okay, a little bit of peace and quiet and, you know, get to watch films. I've been kind of ticking off films from my shame list, all the things I probably should have seen by now that haven't got around to watching. So I've been doing a lot of that at nights. My wife's watching Gangs of London because she hasn't seen any of it before. So she's watching that while I'm either putting the boy to bed or watching some obscure Japanese film that I probably should have seen about 10 years ago. So yeah.
All right, well, let the audience know one of these films so we can go and cop it and have a look, because we like to kill time here. That's the name of the podcast. So go on, recommend one for us.
All right, well, anything I recommend is obviously going to be probably like sitting a little bit outside of the mainstream, so they're not easily accessible.
Go for it.
But I do this thing with some of the guys, so the stunt guys that worked on the show, where we kind of set ourselves a couple of films to watch each week, and then we get on Zoom and chat about them, because that's what the norm is now for us. And so we were watching there's a series of films called the Lone Wolf and Cub movies, where there's about six of them, and they're the tales of like a sort of the samurai executioner and his little boy, and they kind of get hunted through Japan by an evil lord. And so they're like really kind of like garish, fun, exploitational action films. The first two got combined into a film back in the 80s called Shogun Assassin, which I think ended up featuring in one of the Kill Bill films and stuff like that. So yeah, they're pretty like heavy duty violence, but good fun.
Nice. I'm not really surprised there that that's what you're consuming, Gareth, at the moment. I'll be honest with you.
You've been Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
So. You've also been cycling up and down the country, haven't you, Gareth, as well?
Joe very kindly did this thing where he messaged me and said, like, all right, the 5 kilometers, five people, right, in order for the NHS and stuff like that. And I can't run for shit because my knee is shot to shreds. And so, but I can cycle. So I've been doing that a lot lately. So I've been doing these little 20 kilometer stretches across the coastline. So it's been a nice little sort of cycle path then. So yeah. I took the plunge yesterday and bought cycling gear yesterday. So, I looked like the worst extra from Logan's Run today when I went out for a cycle. So yeah. There's not going to be any photographic evidence of that. That's a sure thing.
I was going to say, how tight is it? Can you taste the lycra?
do you remember the film The Running Man?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't look like Arnie in his. So, yeah, let's just put it that way.
All right. That's a vision that I'm going to... it's going to be just marinating in my mind during this podcast episode. Thank you very much for that, Gary.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's cool. So Gareth, Joe, like Gangs of London is what we're here to talk about today, man. I just want to say thank you very much. I wrapped up watching the last episode last night. It's out on Sky right now. Flipping hell. Blew my socks off, lads. Like nothing like it on television at the moment. Quite literally, and we're going to break that down during this episode. But before we get into that, I'd love to talk about both of your experiences when you first came across Gangs of London and whatever iteration it was when you each did. So Gareth, do you want to lead with kind of how it was when you first came across the story, how we came to be?
Yeah, so Pulse reached out to me and they had the rights to the video game, the PSP game for Gangs of London. And I was familiar with the game. I hadn't fully played it, but knew about it. And they initially contacted me about it doing as a feature film franchise. And that was the initial pitch. It was like, oh, we want to do a bunch of films which are based on this game. And so I took a look at it and I was like, the thing that I loved about London as a tourist, you know, it was the same things I loved about New York, which was that they both kind of feel like global cities in a way. And, you know, the beauty of it is being able to go down the street and hear 10, 15 different languages. And so when I was, you know, working on the idea with them, my pitch back to them was, let's not do it as a feature film franchise, let's do it as a long form narrative. Because if we do it in as a TV show, then we can get away with like a 10-minute, 15-minute interlude in each episode where we go off and explore those different cultures and explore those different characters. So like we could start episode 3 with a flashback of Lala's story and get into her story for an episode, you know what I mean? While still continuing to thread through the A story arc across the show. We're in a film franchise, you'd only really get maybe 15 minutes across an entire 2-hour runtime to be able to explore. And so I felt like we could do more justice to, you know, the what makes London so unique across a 10 hours worth of content then. And so I pitched it back to them as a long form narrative. They really responded to that. And then I'd had this concept way back when of when I was living in Indonesia of a Southeast Asian sort of gang story, which I wanted to do as a TV show, which would have started with the death of a mob boss and the fallout from that. And so that was my initial concept, but could never make that in Indonesia. Just never had the budget or the opportunity to do so. And so yeah. I pitched them that as a concept and then they flipped for that. And so we started developing it. And before we knew it, the only thing we really took from the game was the title alone. So we spent about a year and a half trying to think of another title and just couldn't come up with something better. So that's sort of the initial, you know, gestation of it.
Great stuff. I mean, yeah, I mean, when you hear the title, I'll be honest, I was like Gangs of London. I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't know what angle you were going to hit this from. And I think you definitely give us a very unique point of view via Joe's character, you know, Wallace Jr. basically. But yeah, again, like we will get into that, Joe, but how about you? What was your first kind of touch point with Gangs of London and how did you feel about it when you first came across his scripts? Because you've done stuff before that alludes to kind of gangs, but in a different way across different shows. So what was that like for you?
Yeah, believe it or not, Marcus, I get sent scripts for a lot of criminals and a lot of reprobates and a lot of people who are sort of operating in kind of on the wrong side of the track, shall we say. And I received this one after, you know, from my agent. I was doing a film out in New Orleans at the time and I read Gangs of London. And my initial reaction was like, oh, God, what's this going to be? Yeah. It's going to be, yeah, you know, another kind of, I don't know, Cockney sort of, all right, governor. So that was my kind of initial thing. And then saw Gareth was attached. That was the first thing that kind of struck me. And I knew Gareth's work because I'd done A Prayer Before Dawn a couple of years prior to getting the script. And so many of the interviews and so many of the reviews, they'd kind of commented on The Raid and sort of used The Raid as a kind of saying it was The Raid. Prayer Before Dawn was The Raid meets this or The Raid meets that film. Or, you know, because I guess they're set out in the, you know, out in the Far East and, or Eastern Asia. And, you know, so that was it. And I read the script and it just blew me away. It was just amazing. And it was, you know, 10 episodes for Sky Atlantic, Gareth and sort of helming it. And it just felt very exciting, very new. And I kind of just thought, how the hell are they going to put this on television? Because what I'm reading here is very, very ambitious and has not been done before. So this will be very interesting to see how this goes down.
And you indeed did take it to some limits, guys, in this the Gangs of London. Let's just drop the trailer real quick for everyone so they can get a little taste and then we'll get into the actual show itself.
My father was taken from us on the streets of London.
Whoever killed my husband remains an enemy to this family.
I have the entire city looking for his killer. I'm not interested in peace.
Gonna go back and watch it again after this now. Thanks. So let's start with story then, how we tell the story throughout the show. I'll let you lead again with this one, Gareth. Do you want to talk about how we approach the story of gangs in London? I think you kind of grazed against it in the last question, but let's delve a bit more into what we kind of find journey-wise throughout the story.
So basically, myself and Matt Franny, who was a co-creator of the show, we kind of knew we wanted to create the heightened version of London. We didn't want this to feel, that we were bound to make this into like some kind of social commentary. There are other shows that exist that already do that and do that very well. And we knew going into it that what we were going to be bringing to it in terms of the action as the DNA of the show was so, larger than life and so big that if it was trying to also tell this social commentary at the same time, those things would clash. They would undermine each other in a way. And so we knew we wanted to do something that was quite big and grand and operatic. And so that lent itself then to the treatment of London in the show itself. So in the very first shot of the show, when we introduced Sean's character, we started with an upside down aerial view of London. And that, geographically, it's all correct. The river's in the right place and certain buildings and structures are in the right place. But we eliminated and erased all of the sort of landmarks. So, you're already kind of like, off center anyway by being upside down. But then you start realizing, oh, this building's missing. This landmark's gone. And so you kind of take the audience into a more mythic version of the world then. And that was important to us as we were creating the show.
Definitely, definitely. And I mean, if I'm honest, Joe, Sean Wallace starts the show quite literally unsettled. His world is being turned upside down and he's under immense pressure.
When I got the role, I spoke with Gareth in the early stages and Matt, and Gareth sort of suggested that he wanted Sean to be from a kind of a different background. He didn't want him to be stereotypical kind of London and all those things that we've seen before. And as Gareth said, we've seen these things done so well, Guy Ritchie and Top Boy and these things. And Sean is from a different place, and that was very important. And I loved that. I thought, because for me, it means I'm doing something entirely different. Peaky Blinders is very working class. And Sean is essentially a fish out of water in all walks of life. He doesn't quite fit into this gangster world. He's a bit out of his depth. He's probably quite insecure because of who his dad is and maybe his relationship with his dad. He probably never had that kind of that love in the same way. And also he's gone to the most expensive private school in the country and he probably didn't fit in there either because he's from this very messed up family. So I almost felt that he was quite sad in a way. And I actually kind of feel kind of weirdly sorry for him. And he's almost a bit of a loser. And that for me was quite fun. And that was fun to play because it's like, as the show goes on, initially when you meet a character like that, with that much wealth, somebody who's silver spoon, who's at it all, your immediate reaction, I think, is one of dislike. And especially somebody who's probably not as gangster as his dad was. So it takes the whole 9 episodes for you to kind of really start to get this guy and understand this guy. And he grows so much throughout the show. And that for me as an actor was a lot of fun, to actually play somebody who goes on an incredible journey and changes so much. If you watch the first episode and the last episode, the guy is a completely different guy. He's almost enlightened. He's almost, he's become some sort of like a Buddhist guy. He's finally come to terms with who he is. He's comfortable in himself for the first time. He's confident in a different way, whereas at the beginning he's kind of reckless and aggressive and just shuts people down because he thinks they're all, he knows one of them's killed his dad, and he's completely livid and emotional. So for me as an actor, it was a gift and quite a joy to play such a sort of loose cannon and also somebody that's just so polarizing.
I think that was the fun part of that character mine as well, was this idea of, we knew that that first scene, it was going to be quite transgressive, and we're asking an audience to meet this character for the first time doing something morally repugnant, like morally horrible. But there's a real, just to go granular for a second, but there's a real importance about that first line of dialogue that Sean had in that sequence of, what else can I do? Like, he's not like looking over that building, snarling and full of anger and showing his teeth. It's almost kind of like there's a sadness and there's an undercurrent there. And it's one of those things where it's like, even though what he's doing is so impossible to accept on a moral level, the challenge then for that character and for Joe and then for an audience watching the show as the story progresses is this thing of being able to go from that point of introduction and then get to know this person and then get to get under his skin and get to understand what drives him, what has made him, what's going to change him over the course of the show, to get to a point where you realize there's a real like emotional tragedy about him. And so I think that was something that was really important to us. And, you know, when Matt and I were both talking to Kelly and Henry, who was the casting director of the show, and she put Joe's name forward for us, you know, watching a film like Prayer Before Dawn, you know, it gave us a glimpse into, you know, the full range of what Joe was capable and, you know, able to bring to this performance and be able to bring to this role, which is, you know, an ability to be frightening, intense, strong, charismatic, but then also not be afraid of to show vulnerability and fear. And so, you know, we knew we needed Sean to go on that whole complete journey throughout the show then.
And yeah, we definitely see that. Like, I think a really good point that you both put across is, you know, the difference between the character and many of the characters between the first episode and the last episode, the journeys that they take are amazing. And I feel like you were very careful telling that story. Yeah. Not just for the Wallace family and everyone joined to them and Elliot, but throughout the whole character arc of everybody on Gangs of London. But I thought you were also just as careful when it came to the action in this. And I also know this because actually Sky have actually released some short documentaries showing how careful you were with the fight scenes, for example, and the special effects and the action scenes. So can we just talk about how important that was for you and how that has given you a visual style when it comes to the action that you and, you know, Joe partakes in throughout the show, how that visually impacts that?
Yeah, I mean, like, the action side, weirdly, is something that I've been fortunate enough to sort of refine over the course of some, you know, three films I've done within that genre. And so the technique and the sort of the discipline of it has kind of not really changed, you know, and it's been like it started off when I did my very, very first martial arts film, Merantau, out in Indonesia, as a safety net, like the tools of designing previs and figuring out the shots and the edits of action. Was me terrified that I was going to mess up completely and then make a terrible martial arts film, and so it was a safety net, and it was a discipline that came from there, and so it just worked so well that we just kept using that and applying that same technique across everything we've done since. And so when it came to Gangs, obviously working with Jude Poyer, who was the stunt coordinator, that methodology, that technique, was something we applied again, and we knew for the show. We wanted to have, like, you know, every episode should have its own little key moment, its own little sort of like set piece in a way, but it also had to feel like it was still organic to the plot, and it also had to say something about the characters. Like, the action in this couldn't just purely be, oh, let's have a bit of spectacle now, because the audience are going to want a little bit of like 5 minutes of something fun and thrilling to watch. It had to say something about the characters. And so, you know, each one of them will push the plot forward, but also, you know, contribute towards the character arcs across the show then. So, you know, with the campsite, for instance, a very specific reason why we ended on that close-up of Sean is because it's the release valve. It's everything that's been pent up within him for the first two episodes, you know, being kind of like thrown out on this traveler's site of people, you know, that he thinks are somehow responsible or at least connected to the death of his father. And you feel that release valve. So when he's looking up at that inferno of the campsite, you know, his performance is an emotional one. And in the same way that we cut to, you know, the different perspectives, we see what Ed is realizing in that moment. We see what he sees Sean becoming as he gets consumed by this grief and the thirst for revenge. We get to see Marion in her car watching the explosion happening and seeing how her response is to this happening. And then we also see the POV from Mark Lewis Jones's character Kinney as he watches everything that he held dear be decimated into the ground. And so all of those set pieces, they have to say something about character. Otherwise, it's just empty.
Definitely, 100%. And Joe, what was it like being on these enormous set pieces, these big action sequences?
Yeah, it was. I felt like a kid in the playground a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, Gareth had a little bit more work to do than me.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But I'm sure there was a small element of him feeling like a kid in the playground as well. And it was, I remember my first days on set were filming the sequence at the end of episode 2 at the Gypsy Camp. And you know what happens there. And that was the start. That was kind of my baptism of fire, really, to Gangs of London and what it was all about. Yeah, very much literally. And it was just incredible, you know, there. They had huge lighting rigs, huge, you know, they had bullets for days, kind of blanks and all the weapons and, you know, all these caravans everywhere that they were going to blow up. And it was extraordinary. I remember it was like a 2 foot of mud, wasn't it, or something, Gareth, by the end.
It was horrible. It was horrible.
It was like the worst Glastonbury you've ever been to. But it just felt very epic, is the only word to describe it, and very special and just, yeah, a lot of fun. I felt very privileged to be there, really.
Yeah, was that your first day of filming, Joe?
I think that was the beginning. That was my first day. Was that? Yeah, yeah.
That must have been interesting then, in that respect.
Getting home after your first day and someone asking how your day was, yeah.
Yeah, well, I remember Gareth sort of saying, "Sorry, Joe, you're not really going to get to do much acting. You just, you know, but we've got a lot more to do at the moment. It was a lot of action stuff, but it was good. It was good fun."
And that was the thing, because like, when you're doing those action sequences, they're all kind of like, it's compartmentalized into like little pockets of shots here and there, because we are quite forensic and we do shoot them as jigsaw pieces. So the difference, obviously, between action and then doing like, you know, a scene of like intense drama is that you can kind of let that scene play out, you know, and you can let, you know, for the performance side of things, you can be like, right, here's your start, and then let's just go through the whole thing until the tail end of it. So you get that journey of a performance. But the way we shoot action, it's specific. It's like jigsaw pieces. And so it's like, oh, this is where your emotion is for the next 3-4 seconds, and then cut, and then here's the next piece. So it's a whole different discipline. And you know, it's like, yeah, you have to be quite careful about how you put that stuff together then.
But also, yeah. The way Gareth edits those action pieces is he does it on set while we're there, because he's pre-vised the whole thing. He's sort of been in tell me if I get this wrong, Gareth, but in a warehouse, kind of building this, in this case, the Gypsy Camp, with cardboard boxes and stuntmen. And recreating and filming the entire scene in a warehouse with kind of bits and pieces of scaffolding or whatever it is, and then we go and film it. So, and he's filming the pieces and putting them in. So, and he's doing it live. So while we're filming, Gareth is able to show us the first half of the sequence up until our next bit. So that was just a real thrill. It didn't feel, it's just like, look, here we go, guys, this is what it's going to look like. And you're like, Jesus Christ, because he's done it already. And then he's like, yeah, so then you're just going to follow on. So that was really cool, man. That's a really cool way of working.
I think kind of helped your performance as well, because you could kind of see where your character was going to be in that next scene after seeing.
Yeah, it was. It was good. It was good just to understand exactly how it was being put together. Yeah. I found it helpful. Yeah.
Awesome.
We've always kind of done that as a process in a way, because I've always felt like when you're showing your cast and crew, like, you know, the hard work that they've put in throughout the day, at the end of the day we always do like a little playback of the whole thing, so everyone can kind of gather around their laptop and then take a look at the monitors. And then when we did that sequence, it's like, it's kind of like a morale boost. Everyone gets to see what they've contributed towards it, and then they can see that it's going towards something that is going to work, you know. And if it doesn't work, then I'm not showing anyone. But when it does work, it's a real nice kind of like, it just galvanizes the cast and crew together, and it makes you feel like, oh, this is going to be a success. This is going to achieve something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I feel like we were packed full of practical effects, but was it fair to say that you did use quite a good combination of kind of visual effects in there as well? I mean, there's some scenes which are... the camera gets in places I don't think you can put a real camera in real life. It's crazy.
We got a lot in camera. We got a lot of stuff in camera with our SFX guy, Alex Gunn, who did some big films. He did the Rambo film, not the last one, but the one before, which... with all the sort of 50 cal bullets tearing people apart. I mean, that was Alex's his handiwork. And so he was like on board doing our SFX for the show. And then, you know, having, you know, Jude Poyer as the stunt coordinator and all of his team, you know, we had really good guys working across the show. And so, you know, what I found really like exciting and a new experience for me was like this idea of, you know, we were able to push and do more in camera, because in Indonesia, like a lot of the times when we wanted the sort of like the big crazy sort of like stunt shots, those gonzo shots where you're like, how did they do that in one shot? We would do that by, you know, literally, you know, sometimes three shots stitched together to make it feel like you saw something more dangerous. But on this show, like Jude and his expertise, and then, you know, bringing on Dave Judge, who was one of the sort of the wire rigging guys, you know, we were able to kind of do stuff in camera that looked super dangerous and looked like, you know, intense, like the guy being shot off a motorbike by a shotgun. And we got to piece those things together. And it's like, I'd see a take of that. And then as I'm stood watching the monitor waiting for playback, the stunt performer who just got yanked off the back of that motorbike by a bungee cord is now stood next to me watching the take while I'm watching playback. And he's like, oh, do you want me to do it again? And so, like, you know, it's a sign of their professionalism and the fact that they planned everything to the minute detail that, you know, thankfully across the entire show, we didn't have a single serious injury at all across the entire thing. So, yeah, it was a great, great experience working with them.
That's something I think you should be super proud of, because some of the shit that gets pulled off in that film looks like it hurts, even if you are pretending. So that's great to know. I'll be honest with you, I did watch the action sequences and I can feel that there are tastes, there are flavors in there that are Raid like. Are you cool, both of you, I'm gonna ask, are you cool with that comparison? I know I mentioned the Raid at the start, quite intentionally, just those films, Gareth, because there's a lot of other great content that you've done, but I'm very aware that this is going to be a comparison. Are you guys cool with hearing that this is a Raid like production in some ways?
I think like for me it's like, you know, for me it's inevitable. It's like, you know, I don't know why I gravitate towards certain shots. I don't know why certain compositions just interest me, and I don't know why the rhythms of action and kind of, you know, the way that I choose to do them is just like a weird thing where it just makes sense to me. So like, yeah, if they get compared to something I've done in the past, as long as it's not the bad stuff that I've done in the past, then I'm all right. That's fine. That's all good.
What's that like?
What now, you mean like the bad stuff?
Yeah,
oh, no, it's more kind of like, it's like you know, when it's like all filmmakers, when you watch stuff from your past,
right,
you'll see sequences or scenes where you're like, oh, two more shots and that would have worked. Or you, you know, it's like I remember we were shooting a sequence in Maranto. It's like, to this day, I mean, Maranto is, Christ, I shot that in 2008, I want to say, if not 2009. So what is it, 11 years ago, 12 years ago minimum? And, I take a look at that, and there's still one sequence in there where it bugs me to this day. And I'm like, oh, one more shot, and that would have been good. You know, so, you know, it's like, yeah, I can't help it. I self-scrutinize all the time. So, yeah.
I can't help but think your missus is at home watching it, and your missus is watching Gangs of London right now. She's going, do you know what, Gareth? That scene is good, but it could just be a little bit better if you added a couple of extra shots in there.
Well, my wife used to be my producer out in Indonesia, see? So yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm expecting notes.
To be expected. Yeah, how about you, Joe? How do you feel about having this production compared to something like The Raid?
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly the way it's going to go, because it's the same maker and creator, and The Raid is some of the, you know, for me, those films are kind of some of the best martial arts films that I've personally seen, and definitely in the last few years, and so unique and have their own very strong kind of identity and style. So I think that's very cool, man. I'll take that all day long.
It's one of those things where I get it from like an action component, because on a superficial level, of course, there are comparisons, you know, we can't hide that. But I think they are very different. I think when I did The Raid 1, for instance, like The Raid 1 is very sort of streamlined, very simple sort of like storytelling thing. And I think, you know, I feel fortunate that when it came to Gangs, and we were able to kind of work with a talented group of writers who could kind of like bring more depth and more sort of like, you know, exploration of characters and worlds, you know, across the show than I'd ever achieved in like, you know, The Raid or The Raid 2, for instance. And so, yeah. So, you know, tip of the hat to them for all of that work, and for interrogating the ideas and interrogating the storylines. And yeah. Then, you know, and furthermore, then discussing with Joe and with Shell and Lucien and everyone else, you know, sitting on set and discussing those scenes and going through the scripts and going through the dialogue and making sure that what we were doing felt truthful, you know, in the face of all the crazy antics that we were also going to be putting into the show.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like you've amped up this production. It's definitely pushing to the upper echelons of what is possible humanly and what is going on in kind of this kind of gangster environment in London. But it's not too crazy. You know, there's certain films, I won't mention any, that, you know, kind of lose their grounding. But I feel like when you're watching this film, you're grounded by the characters, and you're also grounded by the action being turned up to, it's like to number 11 and a half, but it's not like 15 or something. You're like, no, that's too crazy. But, you know, I was going to say, there's some very strong characters in this film physically in this series as well. So now that you've created something like this, I hope you guys are aware, and I'm not saying this lightly, you've kind of changed the perception of what can be produced having London as a backdrop now. And at the same time also changed what, you know, stations like Sky can put out content wise. This is very groundbreaking. Are you aware that this is now the case with productions like this, with dramas and actions?
Me, not really. I don't. It's like, it's my first rodeo when it comes to like TV work. I've never done it before. I've never had that opportunity before, and you know, it's still new to me. I mean, the first episode only came out last Thursday, and then the whole show obviously dropped at the same time. And I'm kind of just still playing catch up, to be honest, about where we are right now and what we've achieved. It's like it's that weird thing of, you know, traditionally, like week by week, one episode drops and then you get to see what the response is to that. The fact that it's come out as a box set has almost kind of got me in this like sea of like weird emotions where, you know, you're kind of like, you're trying to figure out, oh, who's on ep one now, and who's on ep four, and who's on ep six, and who's on ep eight. Like, everyone's kind of finishing it at different times. And so you're kind of getting, you know, hit left, right and center. So I don't have a sort of, I'm not aware enough yet of a sort of general consensus of what the show is and what its impact will be. It all feels kind of too early to kind of tell right now. I don't know about you feel, Joe, but yeah.
I mean, it's been out a week, so it's like, it's such early days, but obviously because of the ability to binge and because of the time everyone's got on their hands right now, I mean, you know, it is a good time for us to release a show, and it's great that people, you know, to give people something to hopefully entertain them. You know, people are chomping through it. And, you know, I'm getting texts, people who've watched the first one, people who've watched the first four, you know, people who've watched the whole lot. We'll see. I think we'll probably know the lay of the land in the next week or two. But it generally feels kind of like very positive And also, I'm sort of, the scripts I get now and the kind of bits and pieces, you know, the stuff I'm getting sent from television, I'm reading the action sequences now and I think, oh man, like, are they going to be able to do anything close to what Gareth and Corin and Xavier have done? Like, yeah. And but that's a genuine feeling. I'm like, these sequences and this action is the, and obviously it's grounded in truth and it's grounded in all these characters from Luan to Mossy to myself to Elliot, you know, like to Lale, you know, they've all got their truth as well, which is so important because once you've got that, you can have so much fun. So I'm certainly thinking, man, like, it's never going to be the same, you know?
yeah. I'm just thinking back to that, those classic bar fight scenes that you see in movies where somebody just, like, punches somebody and somebody breaks a pool cue in half and slaps her around the face. I'm like, lame. Do you know what I mean? Compared to what we've seen in see when you watch Gangs of London.
It's going to change the perception for people because people are going to be saying, well, look at Gangs of London. You've got to up your game.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that just means for me, as somebody who enjoys watching TV and film, more great content. Thanks for raising the bar, guys. Before I let you go, have you taken the time to watch the series after it's come out? I know some people like to do that, thespians and writers and producers. Have you? I know your wife's watching it, Gareth. Have you seen it?
I had to watch every episode about 10, 15 times before it came out. So yeah, I've seen the show I've seen the show more than anyone. So
Sure. How about you, Joe?
Yeah, I've got a question for Gareth, actually. I'd be interested to know what Gareth's favourite episode outside of his own ones is.
Oh, okay. Nice.
That's a horrible question. I think I'd probably go with 4 and 6. I think four and six kind of blew me away, both of those episodes. And that's the thing, again, and also, like, we haven't really had a chance to kind of mention, and probably should, the fact that, you know, on this journey of doing this show, we were joined by, you know, two incredible directors in Corin Hardy and Xavier Gens, who both brought so much of themselves to this project as well. So it's like, you know, me and Matt had the fortune of being able to kind of like tee things up at the start, but they continued that journey and they continued that world build and that exploration of the show themselves then. But I think 4 and 6, like 4 is just so fucking crazy and jam-packed with like high stakes and big emotion. And you know, and the virtuoso moments in that episode. And then 6 for me is like where I felt like you get these really intense performances where I know some people will fixate and focus on the torture elements of that episode, but for me it's not exploitation at all, like, because there's a heart behind all of it and it's like I understand the motivation of all of the characters involved. And so I remember saying it to Zav, I thought, you know, the performances between like yourself and Michelle and Brian and then Shelby as well were just so strong across that episode. And I think it's a testament to your guys' work and then obviously Xavier's direction as well and Lauren's work writing the script for it. So I think those two episodes are sort of like the ones that I really responded to the most. That was a very fucking thorny question, Mr. Joe Cole. So yeah.
No man, it's all meant with good intent, dude. It's I'm genuinely curious because, you know, obviously they're all so different. They're all, and it's kind of, and everybody's got different favorites. And I think some of them, they're very intimate and they focus on specific characters. Some are kind of wilder. It's more just kind of, I guess it comes down to sort of personal taste. But I've been getting, just in answer to your question, Marcus, like I have to watch it through just so I can kind of critique myself and analyze. And I'm very kind of, I'm very critical and very analytical. And I also like to see what they've cut, what they've kind of shortened, what they've changed. But I don't really understand actors who say they don't watch themselves, because I think for me personally, you know, I never went to drama school or anything like that. The only way I learn is from watching my work back. And I learn, you know, you learn about what kind of works, what doesn't. You learn about pacing. You learn about little things. And so I'm like, bloody hell, I wish I could go and do it all again now. But then there's an element, I was saying this to my mate, who's an actor, the other day, and he was sort of saying, I said something like, if you're 80% happy, then just be happy. Because as an actor, you're constantly going to analyse and you're constantly going to criticise yourself. But if generally you're happy with the whole thing, then I think you should be happy. Yeah.
100%. As long as somebody doesn't walk into the room while you're watching a serious scene of yourself and you're by yourself, it can be a little bit weird if someone walks in on you, you know? You turn around and, what are you doing? Oh, just watching me.
Well, that's the thing, because I'm genuinely watching
to learn.
I'm not watching because I'm gassing myself up.
Luckily,
I live with my brother, so, you know, he can't really say anything. He don't really care, but one of my other brothers just messaged me just now, and he was asking me to send him the script for episode 4 because he's just got up to the end of episode 4, and he lost his head, and he was just like, "My God, like it is the most. It's so kind of wild and so crazy and so insane. I just want to see how it differs on the page." And I sort of said, "Yeah, man." I said, "Yeah, I'm really glad you're enjoying it." I said, "Just wait for episode 5."
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Oh yes. He's in for a treat. But yeah, and I just want to say thank you very much for spending the time to have a chat with us about Gangs of London. It was a glorious watch, man. And I've really enjoyed it, man. Each of the episodes really, really brought it to the table, man, like in terms of story, action, acting. And I just want to thank you guys for putting it together, man. I hope I speak to you again about working on another production, you two. You guys should get together and the rest of the team as well, man. I don't want to feel like I'm disrespecting anyone else, but I'm only talking to you two. So you're going to hold all of the praise for Gangs of London right now. Right?
We'll pass it on.
We'll share it.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, thank you very much for joining us on the show, man. And I'll let you crack on. Have a great day, guys. All right.
Thank you.
Cheers, Mark. Cheers. All the best.
Cheers, man.
Take care.
So there you have it. Gareth Evans and Joe Cole from Gangs of London here on How to Kill an Hour. Make sure you cop it now. You can watch it on Sky TV or you can watch it on Now TV. It's one heck of a ride. And I only spoke to a couple of the people that were involved in the production and acting in this. There's a bunch of great talent in there. A range of acting and action that I have not seen on television ever. Anyway, make sure you join our Facebook group, facebook.com/howtokillanhour, and also like our Facebook page as well. We're How to Kill an Hour on all other social media outlets. I've been Marcus Bronzy at MarcusBronzy. Plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.